Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the capture in Jordan and the trial in New York of Osama bin Laden's son-in-law that is reviving the war within the so-called war on terror, with Republican Senator Lindsey Graham vowing to make sure Sulaiman Abu Ghaith is tried in Guantanamo. Peter Bergen, CNN's national security analyst and author of Manhunt, The 10-Year Search for Bin Laden from 9/11 to Abbottabad, joins us to discuss the battle over Guantanamo that the president has vowed to close and Republican senators seem determined to keep open. Then we'll look into the issues raised by Senator Rand Paul's filibuster against the new head of the CIA over the use of drones in assassinating American citizens that have made Rand Paul something of a hero on the political left, while at the same time his message resonates with his true base of support on the libertarian right and among anti-government militia groups. Paul Pillar, the CIA's former National Intelligence Officer for the Near East and South Asia, joins us to discuss the Central Intelligence Agency's more paramilitary role that John Brennan is inheriting, and when and how concerns over drones that American citizens on the left and right have will be satisfactorily addressed. Then finally, we'll examine the new report by the Southern Poverty Law Center on the four-year explosive growth of conspiracy-minded anti-government patriot groups that have intensified rage on the right against America's first black president. Criminologist, civil rights attorney, and professor of criminal law, Brian Levin, joins us. He was associate director of legal affairs of the Southern Poverty Law Center's Klan Watch Militia Task Force in Montgomery, Alabama. Joining us now is Peter Bergen, who is CNN's national security analyst and the director of National Security Studies Program at the New America Foundation. He's traveled and reported extensively from Afghanistan, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and in 1997, he conducted the first television interview of Osama bin Laden for CNN. He is a New York Times bestselling author whose books include Holy War Incorporated, Inside the Secret World of Osama bin Laden, The Osama bin Laden I Know, An Oral History of Al-Qaeda's Leader, The Longest War, The Enduring Conflict Between America and Al-Qaeda, and his latest book, out soon in paperback, is Manhunt, The 10-Year Search for Bin Laden from 9/11 to Abbottabad. Welcome to Background Briefing, Peter Bergen.
Hello.
So, what do you make of this war within the so-called war on terror that's going on between Senators Lindsey Graham and John McCain and the White House? It's now been revived over the capture in Jordan and the trial in New York of Osama bin Laden's son-in-law.
Well, you know, I think it's sort of a storm in a teacup on multiple levels. You know, this guy, Sulaiman Abu Ghaith, made a sort of poor marital choice, it turned out. You know, he's Osama bin Laden's son-in-law. That doesn't mean that he was an operational player in al-Qaeda. And in fact, a videotape recovered by U.S. soldiers in Kandahar, which was then publicly released around December of 2001, showed bin Laden sort of kicking back with Sulaiman Abu Ghaith and others and talking about the 9/11 attacks. And he says, look, this was so tightly held that I didn't clue in Sulaiman Abu Ghaith. So the defense lawyer in the case is surely going to put that on at the trial. And the the charges against him seem very thin. They're conspiracy charges, not that it's not, you know, they're worth pursuing, but this is far from somebody who's a, you know, a kind of war criminal. And I don't think you could put somebody on trial in Guantanamo on conspiracy charges anyway, since they're not a war crime. So, you know, it belongs in New York. There's 100% conviction rate in terrorism cases in New York State and in Manhattan. In particular, obviously. And, you know, this guy is going to face a pretty long sentence, and I'm sure we'll try and do a plea bargain and explain what is of great interest, which is the al-Qaeda folks that were living in Iran for about a decade, including himself, you know, what that arrangement really consisted of.
Well, that, of course, is something that apparently he's already, hasn't he been debriefed, or he's been supposedly being quite cooperative with his captor so far, and he was captured, I think, a couple of weeks ago, was he not, in Jordan?
Yeah. I mean, he's given a 22-page statement. We don't know what's in that statement, but, that could well be the content of the statement.
So why is Senator Lindsey Graham then, Peter Bergen, why is he so exercised about this? And he's vowed not to take this lying down. This he wants the trials in Guantanamo, as does his tag team, John McCain, on this issue. They've sort of single-handedly kept Guantanamo open. So what's the heart of this battle between the president, who's vowed to close it, and these two Republican senators in particular, who seem determined to keep it open?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's just them. I mean, the Congress has voted, to prevent, for instance, Guantanamo prisoners, any money to be allowed to that would transport Guantanamo prisoners to the United States. And in fact, it was not either of the two senators you mentioned who first kind of prompted it. It was I think it was Frank Wolf of Virginia who first kind of pushed back when Uyghurs, the half dozen Uyghurs who are basically Chinese Muslims from Western China, there was a move to bring them into Northern Virginia, and that really precipitated this whole sort of NIMBY response to all this, which was we're not going to take any Guantanamo prisoners anywhere in the United States. And of course, that had knock-on effects because I think it made it less likely that other countries would accept them. And the Uyghurs, I think, ended up, as it turned out, I think, in Bermuda, finally. So, it's not just these two senators. They're making an issue of this particular point. But I think, the broader this has, there's a lot of support in Congress to essentially take actions that would make it very hard to close Guantanamo. That's just an unfortunate fact.
Again, I'm speaking with Peter Bergen, who's CNN's national security analyst and director of the National Security Studies Program at the New America Foundation. His latest book, out soon in paperback, is Manhunt, the 10-year search for bin Laden from 9/11 to Abbottabad. So, Peter Bergen, what do you make of the extraordinary statements coming from Ahmad Karzai of Afghanistan, who's now more or less implied that the United States and the Taliban are working together to conspire to have American troops stay longer in Afghanistan, apparently against his wishes. We've had some pretty bizarre statements from this erstwhile ally, but this one seems to, particularly when it happens when the new Secretary of Defense is visiting Afghanistan.
Yeah, I mean, it's implausible on its face. The only way that statement could be in any way defensible is it is a fact that U.S. contracting payments have over time ended up in the hands of the Taliban because, although then there's much better safeguards to prevent this now than there were maybe 2 or 3 years ago, but, by the nature of any kind of construction project in Afghanistan, you've got to pay people off to protect it, and often those turn out to be sort of local warlords, some of whom maybe admit themselves to paying off the Taliban to prevent some kind of attack on a construction project. But, that's a defensible version of, U.S. aid, ending up in the hands of the Taliban. What Hamid Karzai is saying, that the U.S. is conspiring with the Taliban to essentially prevent a drawdown of American troops in 2014, it fails every common sense test. I mean, the Taliban really does want the United States to pull out.
Well, there's a very, very powerful documentary made by BBC's Panorama. I don't know whether you've seen it, but it paints a pretty dismal picture of the Afghan army and the police and their abilities to take over from the United States. I mean, you got these guys stoned all day and illiterate.
Well, I've been out on patrol with Afghan policemen and they're smoking weed and stuff. I mean, that, in parts of Afghanistan, that's a pretty kind of common thing. I don't want to defend, certainly the Afghan police is often not a particularly effective force. The Afghan army, I think, is a slightly different issue. If you go in public opinion polls, Afghans repeatedly give very high marks to the Afghan army, and although it's still got a long way to go, the fact is that they are transitioning into control of quite a number of the provinces of Afghanistan, and there's a sort of chicken or egg problem. They're never really going to show their capabilities if the United States is constantly sort of backing them up at every twist or turn. We'll see. Hopefully that they will be able to resist the Taliban And at the end of the day, it's our country, I'm somewhat sanguine that they will.
Well, but there appears to be a bit of a difference on our side about how many troops are going to be left behind. The commander in Afghanistan has doubled the number that the White House has apparently suggested would be the number. So what's happening there, do you think, Peter Bergen?
Well, I think, there's a debate about it. And, I mean, I think I think also in the White House, it's not exactly a uniform, I think Vice President Biden probably would want a much lower number, closer to zero. As he said in the vice presidential debate, he said we're getting out of Afghanistan at the end of 2014 period, which isn't really the case. I mean, we've conducted quite a lot of U.S. government time when it's a negotiating strategic partnership agreement with Afghanistan that basically keeps us there in some shape or form to 2024. And as you've indicated, there's a debate about what those numbers are. But my guess is when all said and done, and this is something that's going to be wrapped up this year, you're looking probably at 8,000 to 10,000 American troops. And then probably as a result of that, there's a NATO mission, it's not just a U.S. mission at all. Other NATO countries will continue to, keep advisors, et cetera. You might be looking at a few thousand other NATO countries' troops in Afghanistan going forward after the 2014 withdrawal of all combat troops. So, there's going to be a presence. It's not going to be large, and that's probably a good thing, but it's not going to be nothing, and that's also a good thing, because at the end of the day, the Afghans want to be reassured that the United States in particular and the international community also isn't just going to sort of turn off the lights in December of 2014 and just leave, because they're very concerned about what that would mean for them.
So the issue, of course, of drones came up in no uncertain manner in the Senate this week with a filibuster by Rand Paul against the all but certain confirmation of John Brennan. And after 13 hours, Rand Paul gave up with a letter from Eric Holder assuring him that an American citizen would not be hit by a weaponized drone drinking coffee in San Francisco. He gave a bunch of examples. But in the area that you've been covering, the AFPAC area, there's been a little confusion over the use of drones. There were some drone strikes that the CIA said they had nothing to do with and the U.S. military had nothing to do with. What's going on there? Are the Pakistanis sharing these platforms?
I don't know the answer to that question. I mean, I think it's a very good one. It's quite unusual for the CIA to sort of disavow a drone strike completely and sort of, on the other hand, it's something that, they haven't been exactly completely transparent about in the past. So I just don't know what to make of that. Certainly the Pakistanis have drones themselves. About 70 countries now have drones in some shape or form. Have they got to the point where they can arm them and conduct these kinds of attacks? I'm a little skeptical of that notion. Is the United States and Pakistan cooperating on drone strikes to some degree? Certainly in the past they have, yet the whole situation is complicated by the fact that the Pakistani parliament actually voted in April to prevent CIA drone strikes on their territory. So it's a very murky story. Lots of people have pretended something that wasn't true about aspects of this program. And the story that you cite about a couple of drone strikes in February, which no one is taking credit for. I think that's sort of we don't really know the answer to that, I don't think.
Well, Peter Bergen, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Peter Bergen, who is CNN's national security analyst and the director of the National Security Studies Program at the New America Foundation. He's traveled and reported extensively from Afghanistan, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, and recently Egypt. In 1997, he conducted the first television interview of Osama bin Laden for CNN, and he's a New York Times best-selling author whose books include Holy War Incorporated, Inside the Secret World of Osama bin Laden, The Osama bin Laden I Know, An Oral History of Al-Qaeda's Leader, The Longest War, The Enduring Conflict Between America and Al-Qaeda, and his latest book, out soon in paperback, is Manhunt, The 10-Year Search for Bin Laden from 9/11 to Abbottabad. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with a former senior CIA official about targeted killing, drones, and torture.